Journey the Bible as together we study God's Word and be inspired. Bible study made fun and informative for all ages. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. I am your host, Sarah, and today is August 27th, 2017. We will be talking about the text assigned for today, for this week. This is the 12th Sunday after Pentecost. Yes, we are still in that Pentecost season, 12 Sundays after we celebrated Pentecost, 12 weeks after we celebrated Pentecost. This is a long season, and that's why it's called Ordinary Time. Some people know it as the green season because the altar cloths and paraments at the church are green during this time, so you get a lot of green. At any rate, we're plugging away through Pentecost, the season of Pentecost. We are plugging away through summer, where some people are at the end of summer. I know school is starting. For some of my friends who go to a modified traditional schedule, their kids have been in school for almost a month now, which is crazy. I have two nieces that started school last week. I have two nieces that are starting school this coming week. So, you know, fall is coming. I hope that the temperatures cool down where I am. That takes a while. Usually it doesn't happen in September or August, and sometimes it starts to happen a little bit in September. But we are getting those cool mornings, and I appreciate that when I go outside. And I almost feel like I need a light sweater. Not yet, but soon. And, okay, that's probably enough of me chattering about the weather. So I'm just saying that I hope that if your children have started school, things are going well. If you're ready for fall, it's coming soon. If you like the heat, then you're enjoying this. You know, just kind of checking in with you. So anyway, the text for today, as I said, the 12th Sunday after Pentecost, and we will begin, as we always do, with the assigned Old Testament reading. And this comes to us again from the book of Isaiah, this time from chapter 51, verses 1 through 6. Listen to me, you that pursue righteousness, you that seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which you were hewn, and to the quarry from which you were dug. Look to Abraham your father and to Sarah who bore you, for he was but one when I called him, but I blessed him and made him many. For the Lord will comfort Zion, he will comfort all her waste places and will make her wilderness like Eden, her desert like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the voice of song. Listen to me, my people, and give heed to me, my nation, for a teaching that will go out from me, and my justice for a light to the peoples. I will bring near my deliverance swiftly. My salvation has gone out, and my arms will rule the peoples. The coastlands await for me, and for my arm they hope. Lift up your eyes to the heavens, and look at the earth beneath. For the heavens will vanish like smoke, the earth will wear out like a garment, and those who live in it will die like gnats. But my salvation will be forever, and my deliverance will never be ended. Again, that's Isaiah chapter 51, verses 1 through 6, and I really like the way it is encouraging us as the readers to not only listen to God, but to remember, you know, remember where we came from, remember our Old Testament roots, to remember the rock from which we were hewn, the quarry from which we were dug, and to look at that, we look to Abraham, our father, and to Sarah, who were the beginnings of this great nation that God promised to them, who were the beginnings of one of these covenants with God, and the covenants that have come since then. It's this whole line of covenants with God, and this whole developing relationship, and we are to look to that. We are to look to the fact that God kept the promise that was made to Abraham and Sarah, that they would indeed have a child, that they would be the parents to many generations, to a great nation. So we're to look to this and to know that things in this world are temporary. You know, they're horrible, but eventually they too will pass, to remember that there's something bigger. Not because then we're supposed to just ignore the things of this world and to say, well, they're temporary and it doesn't matter because eventually we have salvation with God. Yes, that is wonderful, but in the meantime, we're here, right? And we can make a difference, and we can look to those stories of our past, to the rock from which we were hewn and the quarry from which we were dug. We can look in the Bible, both Old Testament and New Testament, and see all of those ordinary people who make a difference. If even sometimes they don't want to. They don't want to do what God calls them to do, and yet they make a difference. And God calls ordinary people like you and like me every single day. So that is the first reading, the Old Testament reading, and as always, during this season of Pentecost, we have an alternate first reading. This week it comes to us from the book of Exodus, chapter 1, verse 8, all the way through chapter 2, verse 10. Now a new king arose over Egypt, who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, "Look, the Israelite people are more numerous and more powerful than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, or they will increase, and in the event of war, join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land." Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to oppress them with forced labor. They built supply cities, Pithom and Ramses, for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread, so that the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. The Egyptians became ruthless in imposing tasks on the Israelites, and made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick and in every kind of field labor. They were ruthless in all the tasks that they imposed on them. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiphrah and the other Puah, "When you act as midwives to the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stool, if it is a boy, kill him, but if it is a girl, she shall live." But the midwives feared God. They did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, "Why have you done this and allowed the boys to live?" The midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife comes to them." So God dwelt well with the midwives, and the peoples multiplied and became very strong. And because the midwives feared God, God gave them families. Then Pharaoh commanded all of his people, "Every boy that is born to the Hebrews you shall throw into the Nile, but you shall let every girl live." Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a fine baby, she hid him 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and plastered it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds on the bank of the river. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river while her attendants walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid to bring it. When she opened it, she saw the child. He was crying, and she took pity on him. "This must be one of the Hebrews' children," she said. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Yes." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child and nurse it for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed it. When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and she took him as her son. She named him Moses, because she said, "I drew him out of the water." And again, that is our alternate Old Testament reading this week from the book of Exodus, starting with chapter 1, verse 8, and going all the way through chapter 2, verse 10. And again, we have another very familiar story. As you can see, we are kind of walking through this history of the Israelites through this, through these covenants with God, showing how things progressed from Abraham and Sarah through Joseph. We were talking about Joseph last week. We talked about Jacob a few weeks ago. And now we have a king, a new king in Egypt who doesn't know Joseph. He didn't know Joseph in Joseph's lifetime. Maybe he's heard the stories, but he doesn't know Joseph. All he knows is that there's a group of people who are very, very numerous. And as so often happens, he lets fear rule his decision making. So it's decided that they're going to give them forced labor to try to keep them under control, to try to keep them from growing even larger in population. And that doesn't work. So then he tries to come up with other plans. You know, he talks to the midwives and tells them to kill the boys, but the midwives fear God, and so they don't. And God rewards them. And then he says to throw all of the boys in the Nile. And it's interesting that Moses' mother actually does this. You know, she takes this and turns it to her advantage. She puts her baby, who becomes Moses, into this basket and puts him into the Nile, not to kill him, but in actuality to save him. And it works. The Pharaoh's daughter finds him and raises him. And then this, of course, moves us into the story of Moses and Exodus, which we don't have here. But here you get this transition from Joseph, who was very well respected, very high up in the court of the Egyptian king, and brings his family during the famine, and they live there in peace and harmony, we assume. But then, you know, you get the Exodus story where the Egyptians have enslaved the Israelites. Here we get the transition. We find out how that begins to happen. So we do have to take our first break of the podcast, but when I come back, I will be moving on to the New Testament texts, the Psalm and the New Testament texts assigned for this week. So stay tuned, and I will be right back.
Do you want to be healthier, yet you just don't know what to do? All these shows telling you this and that, but nothing seems to work. Well, listen close. Golden State Media Concepts has got something great for you. The health and wellness podcast dedicated to workout trends, healthy eating habits, diet, and everything about healthy living. Join us in our banters as we help you not just live life to the fullest, but live it to the healthiest.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. We are talking, of course, about the text assigned for this week, the 12th Sunday after Pentecost. We have so far read through the texts from the Old Testament, Isaiah and Exodus, and now moving into the assigned text from the Psalm and the New Testament texts. So this week's Psalm comes from Psalm 138, and it is verses 1 through 8. I give you thanks, O Lord, with my whole heart. Before the gods I sing your praise. I bow down toward your holy temple and give thanks to your name for your steadfast love and your faithfulness, for you exalted your name and your word above everything. On the day I called, you answered me. You increased my strength of soul. All the kings of the earth shall praise you, O Lord, for they have heard the words of your mouth. They shall sing of the ways of the Lord, for great is the glory of the Lord. For though the Lord is high, he regards the lowly, but the haughty he perceives from far away. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you preserve me against the wrath of my enemies. You stretch out your hand, and your right hand delivers me. The Lord will fulfill his purpose for me. Your steadfast love, O Lord, endures forever. Do not forsake the work of your hands. And again, that's Psalm 138, verses 1 through 8. And I don't want to say too much about this psalm today, but I do want to point out verse 7, because it just jumps out at me whenever I read this psalm. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you preserve me against the wrath of my enemies. You stretch out your hand, and your right hand delivers me. I'm wondering if that jumps out at you. Does it sound familiar to you? Does it make you instantly think of Psalm 23? Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. It's a similar theme, right? And it's important to pay attention to, because it gets brought up more than once. Even though we walk in the midst of trouble, even though, as the psalmist of Psalm 23 describes it, the valley of the shadow of death, or the darkest valley, God is with us. God walks with us no matter what we are walking through. Joy, sorrow, fear, elation, whatever it is, God is with us. And that, I think, is really important to remember. And the Psalms really help us to remember those emotions, all the emotions, and how God walks with us through those emotions. So moving on to the New Testament, we have another reading from Romans, moving straight through this letter from to the Romans, the Roman church. And this one is from Romans chapter 12, which is arguably one of the best known chapters of the book of Romans. It's chapter 12, verses 1 through 8. Paul writes, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and not all the members have the same function, so we who are many are one body in Christ, and individually we are members one of another. We have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us. Prophecy in proportion to faith, ministry in ministering, the teacher in teaching, the exhorter in exhortation, the giver in generosity, the leader in diligence, the compassionate in cheerfulness. And that was verses 1 through 8 of chapter 12 of the book of Romans. And you can see why this chapter is very well known, very popular. Maybe some of those verses sounded familiar to you. Verse 2 always jumps out at me. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. The world around us is confusing and crazy and harsh sometimes and depressing. And this is saying, don't be conformed to this world. Don't let all of that, you know, affect you. Don't get sucked into that drama and that horribleness. Be transformed by the gifts that you've been given, by the grace of God, by the love of God, and use that transformation by the renewing of your mind to go out and make a difference in this world. We have been given different gifts, and there's this image of the body. You know, if you think about your hand does something completely different than what your foot does. And each of us is like that. We make up the whole. We all have different and unique gifts. No one of us, or no two of us, are exactly the same. We are unique in our own ways, and we can use those gifts to make a difference in the world. God has given us those gifts. So one more reading for this week. That reading comes from the Gospel of Matthew. This week from chapter 16, verses 13 through 20. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." Jesus said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. Again, that's Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 20. And finally, the disciples get something right? Especially Peter. Peter so often comes up with these comments, questions that get him in a little bit of trouble, right? But finally, after all of these weeks of the disciples trying to get rid of the people that are there to see Jesus, you know, the crowds and the feeding of the 5,000, the woman from last week, the Canaanite woman, that she's bothering them because she keeps shouting after them and following them. Finally, they seem to get something right. Jesus says, "Who do people say that I am?" And they answer first, "Well, people say, you know, you're John the Baptist, you're Elijah, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe one of the prophets." And Jesus says, "Okay, that's fine. People are saying that, but who do you say that I am?" And Peter, without any equivocation, without any, you know, normal Peterness, says, "You're the Messiah." He gets it right. Whether he knows what that means, and he probably doesn't completely know what that means because they never quite seem to, he gets the answer right. He says it out of this deep well of faith, "You are the Messiah." And Jesus gives him the proper accolades that he deserves for getting, he gets the gold star for getting that question right. And he says, "You are the rock on which I will build my church." And of course, that harkens back to, that takes us back to the reading from Isaiah. "Remember the rock from which you were hewn, the quarry from which you were dug." And some people say that this is kind of a slap in the face, that rock meaning that Peter is kind of dense and thick, and that Jesus is saying this sarcastically, "This is the rock on which I will build my church." But I don't know. I don't. Jesus doesn't tend towards sarcasm so much. He has a lot of emotions, and he has a lot of. Does he tend towards sarcasm? He might. But I don't think in this case that he is tending toward sarcasm. I think he really is saying, "Blessed are you, Simon, and you are the rock on which I will build my church." You're not perfect. Of course you're not perfect. Nobody is perfect. And yet Jesus is doing as God has done and calling a perfectly ordinary person who asks dumb questions and makes silly mistakes and, you know, says the wrong thing and sticks his foot in his mouth and says, "You, Peter, are the rock on which I'm going to build my church. You, with your flaws and your imperfections, you're going to be that rock," which is pretty amazing when you think about it. So we're going to talk more about these texts, but we do have to take our second break of the podcast. Stay tuned, and I will be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast. We are talking about the text assigned for the 12th Sunday after Pentecost, this week of August 27th, 2017. And I have a quick question for you. I know you can't answer me, but I still ask you questions on occasion. Do you have a nickname? Do you have one now? Have you ever had one? I think about this question actually differently since I met my husband, because in his family, pretty much everyone has a nickname. He has cousins. He doesn't know what their real name is because they call, entire family calls them by their nickname. The person introduces him or herself by the nickname. He got a friend request on Facebook from a woman, and he said, "I don't have a clue who this woman is." And then he realized that he has known her whole life by her nickname, and she was friending him under her given name. So I started thinking differently about nicknames. But we sometimes get nicknames, right? We have our given name, and then there are nicknames. Sometimes they're mean. They're given to us by, mean cousins or siblings or people at school. Sometimes they're sweet and loving, you know, that your parents give you as a baby or a child, or your partner gives you. So we have nicknames. But in addition to nicknames, many of us also have titles or descriptions that say something about us. Maybe tell people a little bit about us, or our level of education, or our line of work, or whatever. You might have a title, you might have letters behind your name, etc. There's all kinds of things that describe who we are. Nicknames can tell us what people think of us. They, as I said, can be something that we embrace or something that we wish would go away forever. When I was in elementary school, I didn't circle in on my achievement tests one year. I didn't circle in the A of my name, the first A of my name, hard enough. And so the test came back saying S-R-A-H. And my brother to this day still calls me Esra, which is fine. No big deal. The one that I still don't particularly care for is my middle name is Helen. And I don't know where it started, but people started calling me Sarah Helen Rottenmelon. Yeah, not my favorite. Really didn't want that one to stick. So, but nicknames and, you know, descriptions, titles, whatever, good or bad, say something about us. And nicknames, at least, say something about what other people might think about us. Again, whether that's good or bad. So Jesus starts today's gospel reading with that question. Who do people say that the Son of Man is? And the disciples, of course, answer. People say, you are John the Baptist, Elijah, Jeremiah, one of the prophets. And then he changes the question a bit and says, okay, who do you say that I am? And whenever I hear this story, I wonder how I would reply if Jesus were to ask me this question. Or if anyone asked me that specific, who is Jesus? How would you reply to that question? Because there are a lot of ways that you could answer that question depending on your relationship with Jesus, how you understand Jesus. They could be good or bad. So if someone were to ask you that question, how would you reply? Are there one or two words or phrases that instantly pop into your head or that you consistently think of when you think of Jesus? Jesus' questions are important ones for his context because when he became incarnate, when he came to live among humans and he began his ministry, many people were confused about who he was. And they were confused about not only who he was, but their expectations for him and for the Messiah. And he didn't always fit those expectations, right? They had a very specific idea of what they thought the Messiah should and would be. So people tried to put him in a box, in the box that made the most sense to them. Hence all of the answers of who people were saying that Jesus was. And, you know, none of those answers are bad. The people are comparing Jesus to other people that they look to for inspiration, for ideas of God, etc., in the history of the Israelites. But the answers do show that the people didn't really understand exactly who Jesus was. Yet they didn't have that full understanding. And then he asks the disciples, and like I said earlier, for once, Peter gets it right. He immediately declares that Jesus is the Messiah. He is the Son of the living God. Go, Peter. Yay, good job. He, as I said, was definitely human, and he got it wrong more than he got it right, it seems like. But for once, he nailed it. And Peter recognized that as nice as those other answers were, Jesus was, in fact, the long-awaited Messiah. How we describe Jesus influences how we think about him. The Bible gives us numerous names and descriptions for Jesus, just as it gives us numerous names and descriptions for God. Some of the names for Jesus are Emmanuel, which means God with us, Son of God, Son of Man, described as Good Shepherd, Friend of Tax Collectors and Sinners, Teacher, Healer, Miracle Worker. And I think that the reason there are so many descriptors and names for Jesus is simply because of how important he is. The different names help us to understand Jesus from different perspectives. We get a bigger and more whole picture of who Jesus is by all of these different descriptions rather than just one description. Maybe if we only described him as Messiah, we wouldn't get as clear of a picture as we get when we describe him more fully. So some of those descriptors might make more sense to us at different points in our lives, depending on what is going on. We may be drawn to one of Jesus's identities more fully at different points in our lives. And the same is true for the names and descriptions that we use for God. And again, the Bible is full of those images. The world has given us even more in the time since the Bible was written, in the time since anything really new was added to the Bible. So you can ask yourself the same question that I asked you earlier about Jesus. How do you describe God? And that one might be a little more difficult because in Jesus we have this human that we have so many stories about, but in God, no one has ever really seen God face to face, right? So if you ever want a good overview of the many descriptions of God, the Psalms are a great place to start. You know I love the Psalms. Because the Psalms describe God in a variety of ways through a variety of different lenses. We see God described as protector, as creator, as God who is always present and loving, as God who knows us and loves us more than anything. That's just a few of the descriptions that we get of God in the Psalms. There are so many names for God and Jesus because mere words can really only go so far in describing the wonder of everything that God and Jesus do and have done for us in our lives. God created us and everything that we see, and God is present in our lives through every circumstance, whether we are currently experiencing, like I said, joy and celebration, or whether we are struggling with fear and sadness, God is with us. God created us as God's children and loves us beyond measure. God loves us so much that if you read through the Bible, you will see the great and amazing lengths God goes to in order to stay in relationship with us. And that's what those alternate first readings, alternate first readings, the Old Testament readings, are all about. They're taking you through the history of the Israelites and showing you all the ways that God seeks to be in relationship. As part of this effort, God finally sent us Jesus. Jesus came to live among us and to share in our joys and sorrows, our celebrations, our despair, all the range of human emotions and humanity. And Jesus came to finally and forever fulfill all of God's promises to us. It's no wonder, then, that there aren't enough words in probably any language to adequately describe God and Jesus. So, going back to that first question, Jesus wasn't asking an idle question when he wanted to know what people were saying about him. He wasn't asking an idle question when he asked the disciples who they say he is. Like I said, for once Peter gets it right, but I have to wonder if he fully knew what he was saying. Jesus's response is positive and enthusiastic. He commends Peter for his answer, saying that it is God who has given him this knowledge. And then he tells Peter that he is the rock on which Jesus will build his church. And at this point, I always wonder, what was Peter's reaction? We don't get to see. Peter finally gets it right. We don't get to see what his reaction was. Was he excited about Jesus's endorsement? Or did he wish maybe he hadn't given quite such a good answer? Was his reaction, wow, I didn't really think you were going to make me the rock on which you built your church, Jesus. Can I take that answer back? I'd think it would be a lot of pressure to be the foundation on which something was built, but maybe that's just me. Here's the thing. Peter, of course, wasn't perfect. We have far more stories in the Gospels of Peter being confused or wrong or impulsive or scared than we do of him completely grasping and embracing what Jesus is telling him. And yet, here we have Jesus telling Peter that he is the future, that he is the one, he's one of the ones who will carry on the ministry after Jesus is gone. It's up to him and the rest of the disciples to tell people what they know about Jesus and what this knowledge tells them about God. Jesus' question is far from an idle one. He wants to make sure the disciples are ready for this task of carrying on his ministry and showing them God's love through Jesus' life and ministry. So, what about us? I started this section by asking you to think about how you describe and understand both Jesus and God. Jesus is no longer with us, and the disciples are long dead. Every generation, then, is left to carry on the faith and to tell others what they know about Jesus and what they know about God and God's love for us. So who do you say that Jesus is? Who do you say that God is? These aren't just quick, simple, easy answers. They're not easy questions, and they aren't easy to answer. The answers change over time and as circumstances vary and as we grow in our faith, but our answers can always tell us how we view God. The good news is that how God views us never changes. God's love for us never changes. We are children of God and we always will be. As children of God, then, as heirs with Jesus of all of God's promises, It's our joy. It's our joy to tell others what we know about this family to which we belong. It is our joy to be like the disciples and carry on Jesus' work by sharing God's love with others. It is our turn to be the foundation on which the future is built. And so as you go through this week, as you go through your, you know, the days ahead of you, I hope that you go through them maybe with a deeper understanding, or you start thinking about a deeper understanding of how you understand not only God, but also Jesus, so that you can begin to maybe start sharing that understanding and those ideas with others. That is all the time that we have for today. I want to thank you, as always, for joining me. I invite you to join me again next week when we move on to the 13th Sunday of Pentecost. As always, you can download these on all of those apps that you use for your mobile devices. Anywhere you can download a podcast, you can find us. You can find us at www.gsmcpodcast.com if you want a little bit more information about all of our podcasts. Please follow me on social media. This is not just me pleading for followers. It's me really saying, come engage with me. Ask me your questions. Give me your prayer requests. Tell me what's going on in your life. Tell me how you see God. Tell me how you see Jesus, how you would describe Jesus in one perfect soundbite. Thank you again for joining me. And as you go through this week, as you go through the days ahead, please remember that you are a beautiful and beloved child of God. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.